Well, good morning, everybody. Yes, it's great to have the pleasure of Dwayne Dunn, one of our leading riders here in Australia, and such a magnificent day of racing coming up today, Derby Day. So I had the chance during the week to pop down to the Mornington Peninsula and catch up with him. How are you doing?
Very well, thanks, Brian.
We're just looking out from your window here, overlooking, what, about 15 or 16 acres. Very, very peaceful.
Yeah, it's a lovely part of the world, and we come from Adelaide. We lived on a similar sort of property, and wanted to try and copy that and feel like we're still at home. So it's a lovely part of the world, the Mornington Peninsula, and we're very blessed to be able to live here.
So how do you sort of, is this a good break away from racing? Because although we're on this property and it looks fantastic, there are horses in paddocks and horses with rugs on, so you never get away from it.
No, I look at horses 24/7, so you know, the kids have got their ponies and a couple of spellers, so always around horses, and it's, you know, I grew up on a farm, 1500 acres, so this is a real big downsize, but really enjoy the animals and the country life.
We just reflect on the season completed, and you looked as though you're a great chance of winning the premiership table here. There were three in the running down to the last sort of 3 or 4 weeks, Damien Oliver and, of course, eventual winner in Craig Williams. You're now 43. You gave yourself a chance at a real red-hot go at winning that table.
Yeah, I've had a crack the last few years, and as you alluded to, I'm not getting any younger, but I couldn't be going better than what I am now. So really impressed with the way things are performing and the support I'm getting from the owners and trainers. Obviously, without that, you can't go anywhere, but really impressed with my form, and hopefully I can hold it right through the spring.
Dwayne, you were awarded the Scobie Breasley Medal, which is sort of allocated by a different point system and judged by the stewards and different people from the racing industry. And although you weren't leading rider, you went also close. But to win the Scobie it's a wonderful feat.
Oh yeah, it's very special. You know, it's a great medal, and it's in honour of someone who was a superstar in our industry at the time. And I'd run second in it three times, so it was a little bit of a stigma to me. But I'm glad I've jumped over that hurdle. And people probably don't understand how much knock-on effect there is of support you get after you win a medal like that. So that's also helped to hold my form the way it has.
Did you give yourself a chance of winning it on the night?
I thought I'd be competitive because I felt that I rode consistent all year, and was executing rides properly, and I didn't make too many mistakes I didn't think out there. So I thought I was a real life chance, but I'd been in that situation before where I thought I could win and didn't. So it's an interesting medal. It's something that you don't really know until the final, you know, votes are counted.
You must have been a very proud man that night too, because your son Dylan was the leading apprentice, so he was up at the podium as you were too individually, and we'll talk about Dylan a little later, but that's a night you don't forget.
Oh, absolutely. It would have been special if we both had won the premiership together. I don't think anywhere else in the world would have had that happen, but very special night for us both, just proud of what Dylan's achieved, and also for myself to get over the line. And you know, it's very, very special that we've both been able to compete at a very high level together. So, we're probably a bit more like mates than we are father-son. So it is great to be out there and competing together.
Father-son combination, running and riding in the same races. But let's go back to the start. South Australian born?
Yeah, born in Adelaide. Grew up on Kangaroo Island, as I said. 1,500 acres, 4,000 head of sheep. There was plenty of work to be done. The only bus I knew how to catch was the yellow one that went past the front gate. So it's been a long ride up. And, to go through my career like that and end up on a little island again like Hong Kong, which is similar size to Kangaroo Island, was something pretty special as well.
Your dad, Bill, trained?
Yeah, Dad sort of trained a couple over there on the island. He had an owner that was going to set him up as a big stud there. Just similar climate and similar soil to New Zealand. So they had it in their mind that was going to be the place. But unfortunately, he passed away and we never come to fruition. But when Dad moved to Adelaide, he got serious about his training, and that was probably 10 years after I was up and about.
Yeah, your first winner was Oliver's Turn in 1989.
Yeah, Oliver's Turn. My first winner was actually Whisper On just before that, like 2 days before. Oliver's Turn was my second one for Sam Turner, but it took me a long time to ride my first winner. I was sort of, I think it was 70, 72 rides before I cracked the safe open, and yeah, from then that's probably been my longest run of out. So very special day, something you'd never forget. And I actually went to the races with Peter Hutchison that day. He drove me to the races and bought me an ice cream before we started, and maybe that just got me relaxed. And yeah, it was at Gawler. Very special day, I'll never forget.
Yeah, and the days were good. You were very successful in South Australia, and it must have been terrific to be a part of, you know, winning and winning in your home state. I think you had three premiership titles?
Yeah, that's right. I never went anywhere in a boom in Adelaide. I just slowly climbed up the ranks, and I just feel that by doing that, sort of made me more mentally mature to handle it when it was presented to me, and to get those accolades. So I never went anywhere in a rush, but I was always climbing the ladder and always improving. So that's always something I look back to that probably helped me to model me for the future. And, you know, there's a lot of kids that get everything there in front of them, and they ride a lot of winners very quickly, but they also drop off the radar as quick as what they turned up. So I was fortunate enough to slowly climb up the ladder, and hopefully I can stay there for a bit longer yet.
You had a wonderful association with Team Hawks, John Hawks and his two sons, Michael and Wayne. Did this sort of emanate from South Australia back in those days?
Yeah, certainly did. You know, Michael and Wayne were all similar ages, and the thing was, I was actually stable rider for Team Hawks when they were under the Ingham banner back in Adelaide. So I had my master, John Hall, and I was stable rider for Ingham's there and Team Hawks. So we go back a long way, and we've had a lot of success together. And, you know, it's something special that I've had their support, and we're still being able to produce really nice horses and be competitive.
Is that the same John Hall who worked with Bart?
Certainly was. You know, his probably biggest feat was Saratov won the Perth Cup. When I first went to John, he probably had a stable of 30 horses. He would train 3 to 4 winners every Saturday. Saratov, as I say, he had a very good association with Bart Cummings and the old stables in Glenelg. So, you know, he was a real worker. He probably lacked the communication skills with the owner, which stopped him from going all the way. But a very good trainer and very hard boss, but you know, he taught me so much.
And did you ever believe that you'd break out of Adelaide and sort of, were you always sort of aspiring to get to Melbourne or even beyond, and you got to Hong Kong?
Yeah, I just had this one dream that I wanted to go international. And how I was going to get there, I didn't know. It's like when I left school to be a jockey. I didn't know how I was going to do it. I just wanted to do it. And, we had a little stint here in Melbourne, and Amanda got sick, so we had to go back home. We had 9 months in Perth, spent a bit of time over there, came back, and, I sort of was back in Adelaide. I had 34 winners out of 13 meetings, and I got the phone call from Hong Kong to get the contract there. So that was a very, very special day in my life, and although it was special at the time, it actually ended in tears. We were there for 2 weeks and I had a bad crash, so I went from being on top of the world to under it. And with the Chinese, their mentality is once you've had something really bad happen to you, you must have something really good. So I reapplied for my contract after I had 3 months out of the saddle, and they refused it because I wasn't back riding at that stage. Then the first day back, I rode 3 winners, and I rode a winner for Dad at 150-1. And as soon as I got in the car and turned my phone on, Hong Kong Jockey Club were calling, so they said you can come back. So the rest is history from there.
Did you team up then with David Hayes, who was based in Hong Kong?
Yeah, I certainly did. It was quite different in the fact that I didn't ride for him in Adelaide. He was Team Hayes was a big operation, but I didn't actually ride for them, and it wasn't until I got to Hong Kong that I basically rode number 2 for David. Although I was contracted to the Hong Kong Jockey Club, I sort of nestled myself in there because of the Australian connection, and I rode under Basil Marcus, was the superstar then. He was the Douglas White, or even probably a little bit better than Douglas, and he's what he'd achieved at that stage. And then once Basil had moved on, then I was sort of rode number 2 under Jared Mosse. So David and I go back a long way, and I was fortunate enough to ride my first Group 1 winner for David Hayes on a horse called Charming City. We won the sprint race there, so that was a very special day also.
The laws of racing in Hong Kong are probably, or the rules of racing and what's expected from you as a jockey are probably the most stringent of the globe. How did you find living there, and how did you cope with the living style?
Yeah, it was it's difficult. They knew more about me than I knew about me. They knew everything, bank accounts, who you owed money to, what you were, who you were involved with, and what you were doing. And it's a real hard school of knocks up there. When I arrived there, I think Eddie Murtagh had ridden 36 group winners for the season, and he was flat out getting a track work ride. So it was like, this is going to be very, very difficult. And I was fortunate enough to open the door and get going. But living there took a little bit of getting used to. You're living in apartments. You live on race, on course. It's a little bit like Melrose Place. Everyone knows everyone else's business, what you're doing. And Hong Kong, I feel, is when you're going extremely well, you've got so much support and people, you're sort of warm to you. But when you're on the outer, it's very easily to be very, very lonely there. There's, you know, it's a big population, but you're easily forgotten. So on the flip side of that is the fact that they give people opportunities when they turn up there. They don't care what your record is before. You just got to do it out on the track. And if you can produce that, then you get the support. So I was fortunate enough to get a winner after I'd had my crash and got back there, and then things blossomed from there.
It's high stakes in Hong Kong, but it's all about the punt, isn't it? It's all driven by the gambling dollar over there.
Oh yeah, the money, the, you know, it's $1 billion turnover any meeting, and you know, they have a very big integrity department. They have, you know, someone's always following you. Your phones are tapped. Your apartments are tapped, and you know, it's high stakes, it's high money, and you know, they know that their integrity's obviously the illegal gambling and the illegal bookmakers are what they don't want to be involved in, and they spend a lot of resources trying to stop that from happening.
How long was your tenure there?
I did from 2000 to 2004, was full on. Dylan went to school there, and Jessica was only a baby at the time, so we did those 4 years, and then I did 2 years off and on till 2006, and I try to get back there at least once a year if I can, just to keep in touch with connections. And I had a lot of success up there, and a lot of owners that still enjoy having me around and going out to lunch with. So, you know, we've still got a lot of friends up there. I spend a lot of time being a stable rider for Tony Millard, South African trainer there. He trained last year's Derby winner and that. But if the opportunity arises one day, maybe I might go back. But the way things are going in Australia, I'm not in a hurry to move.
Is it for a jockey, say, of your level, is it the best job to have, to be riding, and particularly with a strong stable in Hong Kong?
Oh, for sure. You know, it's back when I went there in 2000s, I was probably equating 1 year in Hong Kong was like 10 years in Australia. And it just wasn't as popular as what it is now, with the coverage is a lot bigger and you get to see a lot more Hong Kong racing. But when I was there, that wasn't really happening. So the profiles lifted a lot, and I think Australians see a lot more of Hong Kong racing and appreciate how hard it is. And, you know, it's only a small little bowl of fish, and you got to try and be the biggest fish in the pond.
Yeah, and they're a lot competing. Brett Prebble's sort of calling Hong Kong home now. He must have been there for 10 or 12 years. You've got Nashra Willer, Zach Purton, Sam Clipperton. The Aussies are doing so well.
Yeah, they do a great job up there. And I think we've seen how well guys have spent some time up there and how they've matured and become better riders in Australia. You know, Damien Lanes, Michael Walker spent some time there. We have quite a number of jockeys that have been there and come back. I'm sure Sam Clipperton will be a much better rider when he returns to Australia.
We're spending some time for Toten Brothers Funeral, celebrating life, and we're spending some time with top rider Dwayne Dunn. I'm with Dwayne Dunn, and of course today is Derby Day. What a fabulous day of racing. We'll talk about your rides in a moment, but tell me about riding in the same race as Dylan, your son Dylan. Just a little bit of a background on Dylan. If I recall, I was calling at a meeting at Sejuna a year or two back, or maybe 18 months ago, and it was his first day out. You were there to look after him when you were recovering from an injury.
Yeah, I bulged three discs in my neck, so I was out of the saddle, so maybe that might have been hindsight that I gave me the opportunity to go there and you know, be with him for his first day at the races. And as you alluded to, you were the race caller, and I had to hold the phone so that my wife could hear the call and beam it back to Melbourne. So a very special day for us, and that's where I kicked off my career. As I had my first rides at Ceduna, and Dylan was, you know, that's where he got to kick off as well. So that was a pretty special day.
I won't forget it, because you said come down and meet him. It was in the mounting yard before the day, and it's what, one or two meetings a year there at Ceduna on the dirt track. And I think before the first, I had to clear a snake from over near the barriers in the back straight. But I still remember meeting your son that day, Dylan, and he was so serious. He was so, you could see, he was so focused.
Yeah, I kept him away from the industry because, you know, I know the dangers of it, and he's well documented that he struggles with his weight, and so I was probably the one trying to push him in another direction. But he just got himself so motivated and focused to lose weight and turn up there and do the job. And so we got to a stage where we needed to support him, and you know, it's a credit to himself and his dedication that he's been able to be as good at the game, but also being able to get his weight right to compete in that level.
Yeah, and how's he going now?
Yeah, he's still, the weight problem hasn't disappeared. It's probably got a little bit worse, but he's handling it well. As anything, the more winners you ride, the easier your life gets or your job gets. So the more winners you can get, the more confidence he gets to be able to keep maintaining his weight at that special level that he needs to. How much longer he's got in the game, I hope it's a lot longer yet, but yeah, his body will tell him that when it's time to give it away.
On many occasions, you go out and do a race, whether it be on the provincial tracks or on the city tracks, riding with your son in the same race. How do you cope with that? You know, you're mindful, of course, where he is, if he's up in front of you or behind you. How do you deal with that?
Yeah, it's taken me a long time to get my head around it. It's the knowing where he is or following him, knowing that he's going to execute the job right. And as we all know, it's a dangerous sport, and there'd be nothing worse than me putting him on the floor or him putting me on the floor or someone else being brought down in that throughout the race. So it's always in the back of your mind what's going on. So it's taken me quite a while to get over that stigma of knowing where he is or feeling where he is in a race. So I've got a job to do. I've got to execute that as well. So that's obviously number one, but we all want to come home safely. And it's just taken a while for me to get out of that parent mode and into race mode, but we're well and truly over that now.
Have you found yourself up alongside him in any races?
Yeah, we levelled up at Sandown. He was on David Hayes' horse, and I snuck up his inside. He could feel me there, and he ended up beating me ahead. So that was our closest finish, and he reminds me of that quite regularly. But I do keep in the back of my mind a little bit of a ledger of who's in front. I think I've still got him covered for a little while.
And Dwayne, he's still in his apprenticeship, your son Dylan. You're down here on the peninsula. It's a fair hike up to the city tracks. You're not too far from Mornington. So does he live at home, or is he based up around the Flemington area?
Yeah, he lives up at Flemington. I was fortunate enough to have an apartment there that I used when I was flying in and out for David Hayes, and kept that. So he lives up there, and I spend sort of maybe one or two nights a week there also. So we're still pretty close family, but he's right close to his work, and I'm down here. So it's actually good for him to be apart and grow up. Sending him back to Adelaide wasn't a bad thing. He's had to grow up and mature in himself, know how to look after himself, and it's good that I'm not there to fight his battles. He's had to learn to how to handle things that transpire in the race day procedures, and you know, he's grown into a nice young gentleman.
It's hard for the apprentices, the boys or the girls that do have that claim of 2 kilos or 1.5 kilos or even 3. And we've got some terrific young talent coming through, the Bens, Ben Allen and Ben Thomas and Bo Mertens, and they come through the Apprentice Academy. And, you know, we should be proud in Victoria as to what we're producing with the boys and girls. But this time of the year, it's rare for them to get a ride because they're races where they can't take their allowance and it's high stakes.
Yeah, that's right. It's this time of year they sort of disappear back to the provincials on a Saturday when we're racing. But as you alluded to, there's some very good riders out there, and we're starting to see the actual sons of jockeys, as you say, the Mertens and Stephen King's lads about to step out, and you know, the Allens, they're very good riders in their own right. They probably have a real spike in probably profile by their 3 kilo claim, but it's when they get down to 1.5, 2 that they sort of level off a bit. But you know, every rider gets their opportunity when they get a claim to do something, and then how they take the next step from there is up to the individual and their ability. But yeah, very lucky in Victoria to have such high quality, you know, young riders coming through, very professional. And I think it's been a real big improvement in our sport the last 10 years, how well they've been presented and how well they do their job.
Damien Oliver was rubbed out for interference for reckless riding on a horse, Flying Artie, on the second day of the Caulfield Carnival. The horse won, and his suspension means that he can't resume riding until Melbourne Cup Day next Tuesday. So he misses an important day like Derby Day today. What's your take on that at this time of the year? Should it be treated differently? Should it be a massive fine? Because at the end of the day, punters want guys like yourself, high-profile professional riders. We want you on the track. You know, we need C. Williams, we need D. Oliver, we need D. Dunn riding, and it's got to be good for turnover.
Yeah, I don't think our industry really understands how much turnover that someone like Damien Oliver or Craig Williams promotes in the betting turnover. So, you know, if Damien Oliver or Craig Williams or someone turns up on a Thursday at Bendigo, their turnover is going to go up. And I think we need to put a bit more emphasis on that and have these guys, as you say, out there. And Hong Kong took that on board. They used to suspend you for 4, 5, 6 meetings, but they found out by having Douglas White or Moreira not riding, it was actually detrimental to their turnover. So they turned their suspensions into maybe a 2-day suspension and then get fined for every subsequent day after that. So how they worked out that monetary fund was what your average earning was for the last 10 meetings. So that's you'll get fined for that day. So you might lose 20,000 for that day. But they want you out there, and we need turnover. That's our big thing. And I don't think Australia, we really understand how much these guys deliver to turnover. And we probably need to do a few more studies to look at that and how we can do it better.
Yeah, I agree. And it will come. I think it will come, you know, because of that turnover situation. Now, you didn't ride on Wednesday at the Bendigo Cup program. You probably could have had 4 or 5 rides. But is it more sort of looking after yourself or making sure you don't get suspended? Is that what we see happening now?
Yeah, that's, well, you try to lock into that mode, but the more you worry about it, the more you seem to come unstuck, I think, with the suspensions. You don't want to be suspended, but, you know, injury's another one. I just find that I seem to ride so much better when I'm fresher. If I'm racing every day, I don't seem to feel as good getting into those big meetings. So before the Guineas meeting, I didn't ride all that week and went into that. So personally, I'd rather be fresher than what I am. Go around Thursday night for one, Friday night for one, and then we're into Saturday. So I've had a pretty easy week. But, yeah, suspension's a killer this time. And as has been documented with Damien, he could lose so much in this little window. And, you know, we've got to try and take that out of the game if we can, to try and make sure that we can earn and be competitive on this sort of level.
And so you go in fresh into to Derby Day today. You rode Moonee Valley Friday night last week and Moonee Valley Cox Plate Day. Not much luck.
No, I had a terrible 2 days there. The track didn't play the way I needed it to, and I just wasn't finding the right spot. It's just a total backflip on what was Guineas Day for me. Everything went right, found the right spots, out of the wind and up the rail. So that's just the way the flip of the coin is. You know, you got kingpin horses like Chautauqua out there. You want to do your best, and wasn't through my execution that we didn't see the result. Well, obviously he's not going as well as what he has been in the past. And yeah, it was a frustrating 2 days, but we bounce back into today's racing.
Yeah, and just back to that Guineas Day, there were 2 Group 1s on the day that you added, the Caulfield Guineas, which is now, I think you've got 2 Caulfield Guineas on the board, and you won the Toorak Handicap. Like, to come away from a day like that on the 15th of, it was the 8th of October, yeah, Guineas Day, you come away with 2 Group 1s, that's pretty important.
Yeah, very special. You sort of want to get up and about early in the carnival, and that holds through. So if you're going to be winning the derby, on, it's probably not going to really give you too good a knock-on effect later in the carnival, because most of those rides are already sorted. So you really want to get up and about early in through the spring, and then hopefully that transpires into some really nice rides going forward.
Yeah. So you're in a good sort of space, do you feel, at the moment, fitness-wise, for such an important week?
Yeah, this is as fit as I've ever been, and I'm not carrying injuries like I have been in the past. And as I say, I try and keep myself fresh. I keep telling myself I'm semi-retired and just get the opportunity to just go to the races and try and perform at my best. So I think we've seen in the years gone by that we've had blokes like Jim Cassidy perform at Group 1 level right till the end, and you know, he's 50, 51 before he retired. So I'm hoping this is a trend going forward.
For our audience, how would you prepare for a day like today? Such a big day. You've got your rides circled, and we'll talk about those later, but you're up early because it's natural for you to be waking early.
Already done my speed maps. I'll just go back over my rides for the day, watch a couple of replays, just try and get your head into a good space, what's around you, and get to the races without overanalyzing. I think I fell into a situation where I went through where I was doing too much homework, too much analysts on some of these races, and trying to execute or be in certain places that I couldn't. And I found that I've been able to achieve results by finding the right part of the track and just riding to the feel of what the horse is giving me. So sometimes we get too ahead of the game and overanalyze, and I just try to take a step back and just enjoy the day.
It's like a grand final day today, and it will be even greater on Cup Day. What's the environment like in the dressing rooms, in the jockeys' room? Is there much discussion, or do you find that most guys and girls are going into their own sort of zone?
Yeah, there's a fair bit of banter gets around normally.
Does that help cut the air a bit?
It does a little bit, but once you lead into these races, like before the Melbourne Cup, the hour leading into that, the silence starts to come in the room, and everyone starts to get into their own sort of circle of where they need to be and start thinking about how they're going to execute it. These races change your life. They don't just change the way you live day to day, but they actually change your life going forward. And I'm sure if you asked Michelle, she would have had no idea the whirlwind effect of the knock-on of winning a race like a Melbourne Cup. And I haven't felt that yet, but I felt it with the Caulfield Cup by winning that, and how much you get thrown into the limelight, and your profile lifts, and the expectation from the industry and the media, what they expect of you and what you need to deliver.
Yeah, well, you've got sort of that understanding. Is it part of your license that there are certain sort of rules you've got to obey in terms of promoting the sport? You've got to be available for interviews, because now the riders of today, like yourself and your son coming through, you know, you're on racing.com or you're on radio, you're on an interview situation with me this morning. There's a greater demand, but all riders seem to have gone up a level.
Yeah, I think we have to. I think we've got to... When it goes back to the nuts and bolts of the whole thing, is it's about turnover in our industry, and we need to help promote that. I felt that the industry probably lacks in the fact of keeping us away from the public too much. I think we need to be a little bit more front and centre, and hopefully by doing more interviews, and as you say, we don't get paid for any of that stuff, but it's a knock-on effect to try and promote the industry and our own brand. You know, there's going to be life after racing, so hopefully it leads to something there.
Dwayne Dunn is my special guest. We're taking a break now for Tobin Brothers' funeral, celebrating life, and it's been a great life in racing with Dwayne, and we'll come back and talk about some of those great horses after this break. Well, Dwayne, we touched on some of the horses, in particular Chautauqua, who's got a huge following. He's an amazing horse. What he can do on his day, just drop out of the clouds at the highest level. We saw it in Hong Kong when Tommy Berry was on him, but we saw you in the Lightning Stakes appear from nowhere on him. What's happened this time round? He just hasn't come up. He's had two runs back.
Yeah, Houdini's been left back in the cage. He just hasn't. Didn't come up this time. You got to realise he's flown back from Hong Kong. He probably spent 2 weeks in quarantine in a box, then he's probably had 3 weeks in the paddock, and then he's got to get back and get ready for the elite level. And as you know, if you're 1% off of your game, you get shown up at that level, you can't get away with free kicks. So It's unfortunate we haven't seen him at his best, but I'm sure the trip's probably taken more out of him. He's getting older. He's not as sharp as what he was, and probably a good rest now, and we'll see him in the autumn. I'm sure he'll bounce back.
Some people that saw his run, and I saw his run there at Moonee Valley last Friday night, and I thought he wasn't too disappointing. He was just run off his legs, which we probably expected, but maybe we come to expect a bit too much because we know what he can do, even on the global stage. But a great horseman like John Hawkes had no hesitation in saying, no, we're going to stop straight to the paddock.
Yeah, well, John knows the horse better than anyone. I only see him in his trials and races, and you know, we felt that he was probably five or six lengths below his best. You know, Rebel Dane beat him, but last year he beat him quite convincingly. So he's, as you say, he's only been beaten two lengths. It's not terrible. It's just he's just not the winner of running second. So we'd like to see him bounce back. And you know, his racing pattern probably doesn't help him. He gets dictated to by tempos and way tracks are playing. So that's why he is a little bit of Houdini. He has to get out of some spots that other horses can't get out of.
He'll get back.
Oh, he'll be back. Maybe just whether he needs a set of blinkers on or the brake, but he'll bounce back. We'll see him back at the top level again.
A wonderful racehorse called All Too Hard, who you had eight rides on for seven wins, four of those at Group 1 level. Second in the Cox Plate, you couldn't ride him. He had the three-year-old's weight of 47 kilos. But the half-brother to Black Caviar, he's a million-dollar yearling. He's now a stallion, but gee, what an exciting horse he was.
Yeah, he was pretty special. The first time I jumped him out, I only jumped him out with one another horse, and I went, gee, they paid $1 million for this. They're going to be in trouble. I'm glad it's their money. And then the second time I did him, he was just away. And I remember getting back in the car, and the hairs were standing up on my arms, and I was like, wow, I think I found myself a real horse. And as his record speaks for itself, he had to live in the shadow of such a superstar, and for him to do what he did was something really special, because he had the weight of the world on his shoulders, and I think he stepped out the shadows and put his own stamp on life.
He only raced for 14 months. He had 12 starts, All Too Hard, won four at Group 1 level, and won over $2 million in prize money. But he was always going to be looked after from a stallion point of view. He was by a sort of not a high-profile horse in Casino Prince, but of course he and Black Caviar shared the same mum.
Yeah, that's right, Helsing. And he went to Sydney after he was here in Melbourne, and they said, oh, he just doesn't go Sydney way. But he was probably carrying a little bit of an injury. He wasn't right and at his best. So that's when he sort of found that, you know, Sydney were potting him for a while, but it was great to get back there in the all age and put that to bed.
When you got to Melbourne, you teamed up again with David Hayes, I think it was 2006. Before that, you were able to win a string of blue diamonds. I think there were four in a row, 2005 through to 2008.
Yeah, it's funny. You get some races that, for that to happen, it could have been a maiden at Mornington or something. You won four in a row and you wouldn't even think about it, but very, very special. I was able to come back and from Hong Kong, and it was a very special race to me, and I was fortunate to win four in a row, and I actually was going for five, and I won on reward for effort in the preview, and I had to get off of him because of you know, Luke Nolan was getting back on him, and I was contracted to Freeman's at the time, so it would have been I think it was going for a world record. We were going for five in a row, and I talked Lee Freeman into running his filly. I can't think of the name off the top of my head, but he said, oh, you only want me to run it because you want to ride in the race. I said, no, I think this thing is a live chance. And she ended up running third. So it's been a really great race to me, and hopefully it's not finished with yet.
No, it's not. And it squeezed in the middle was the win on Torquay, of course, in the Caulfield Cup in 2006. And those colours of Sheikh Hamdan, blue with the white epaulettes, they've been pretty good to you.
Yeah, I was nearly going to start sleeping in him. They were going that well for me. So it's been ironic that Dylan's had a lot of success with those colours as well. But
he's won in the Queen's colours too.
Yeah, he's done something I haven't done. He rode the first winner for the Queen in Australia, and I could only run second on that horse. But yeah, those colours are very special to me. That changed my life winning the Caulfield Cup. That I think that took me to another level with the respect from the Victorian trainers and owners, and I've been lucky enough to be able to build off the back of that. But yeah, the Caulfield Cup was a real game changer for me. To win four Blue Diamonds was fantastic, but the real turning point in my career in Australia, I felt, was the Caulfield Cup.
Okay, we really upped the ante, of course, on Melbourne Cup Day. It's a $6 million race, and the internationals are raiding here again. How are you looking?
Yeah, our Ivanhoe looks like my ride. He's
you want some rain, don't you?
Yeah, hopefully the sprinklers are out and about. There's forecast rain on Monday, Tuesday. So if he does get that, he's a live chance. If he doesn't get that, he's a top 10 chance. And as I say, if the wetter, he doesn't want it bottomless, but he just wants that jar out of the track, and he can perform really well.
Yeah, he finished off nicely in the Caulfield Cup, and we know last year he sort of got knocked over at a critical point in the straights. He probably should have finished a lot closer. What about the internationals? Do you keep an eye on them?
Yeah, internationals are always really hard to line up because we don't understand the form that well, and you know, there looks like some internationals that will go a gallop this year, and Aidan O'Brien tried that a few years ago and it brought him unstuck. So it's just, you've got to keep an eye on them. You've got to respect their form, but it is just a totally different race, and just a matter of getting yourself into a good rhythm and be strong late.
Yeah, they're down there at the quarantine station. Even people like David Hayes say they can't get their head around the form. We look at the replays and say, well, that's a good run in a field of six in Ireland. It hasn't raced since, you know, the first week of September. It's not in our psyche to even think that way as punters or even racing fans.
No, that's right. And that's going forward, you know, Australia's not design their breeding industry to compete in those sort of races. So we're all about speed, all about running week in, week out, where they just run, you know, 3 months, 4 months apart, first up 2 mile. And yeah, as I say, we don't really understand it that well, but I think we need to learn to, because they're going to win more races or win more Melbourne Cups in Australia if they keep dominating like they do.
And they bring, quite often, the internationals bring their own riders. We've seen Ryan Moore come here and of course, win the Melbourne Cup and win the Cox Plate. He's arguably the best rider in the world. Does that trouble you guys, the fact that for the big prize money, the major race, our greatest race, that you know, the internationals come and they BYO?
Yeah, it's hard for us to get rides, like to lock yourself into something. And for an Australian jockey to be winning that race now is going to make it very difficult. But I think you've seen guys like Bowman, Berry, Craig Williams spend a bit of time in Japan, Hong Kong. They're starting to get an association there. We need to be getting more to England just to try and feel that we can break in there a little bit, so we get that opportunity when they come to Australia. I think they like Australian riders, but they still can bring in blokes like Ryan Moore or Frankie Dettori, which they're such big players around the world. They ride in different circuits, different tempos, and they can adapt very quick to our racing, where some of the other guys probably haven't adapted as quick as what they have.
Okay, we're talking with our good friend Dwayne Dunn today, one of our leading riders here in Australia, and this is Wednesday, and we're talking about today, of course, Derby Day, probably the greatest. Would you say it's the greatest day of racing on our calendar?
I think it's our, yeah, this is the best day, the pinnacle. This is high level, high stakes, and the quality of horses throughout the day is phenomenal. And, you know, there's not one or two chances in these races, there's seven, eight, nine. So I think for the racing public, it's going to be hard for the punter to try and single them out. But for us as riders, the quality of animal that we get to be aboard through a lovely day like this is outstanding.
Well, let's get down to tin tacks. We've just got the fields through. You've got a pretty busy day.
Yeah, got enough to do. Not as busy as what I may have thought I'd be, but still busy enough with some nice horses.
Yeah, Derby ride?
Inference. He's going along beautifully. Team Hawks just positioned him in the B grade, just ticked him over, got enough prize money to get in there. He sort of struggled to adapt to Moonee Valley, went to Caulfield, was in a beautiful spot, got dragged out of the race, but attacked the line nicely, and I think he's a live chance. He's by So You Think. He looks very much like his dad, and, you know, he's going to be a major player.
What about Don't Doubt Mama? She's drawn wide.
Yeah, she's drawn a bit sticky. Would have liked to have drawn a bit lower, and as you've seen when I won on her at Flemington, over the 1400, she can race a bit closer if you get that right barrier. You just got to be mindful that the mile at Flemington's probably really getting to the end of her distance range, and I just need a little bit of luck in running to find the right spot and just toe up, and hopefully we can see her acceleration late.
Most improved horses, he's our Rocky, won the Toorak to Group 1 level for you. What about him today?
Yeah, the Rockstar. He's he's been a great horse to me. I was fortunate enough to combine with him, and we've gone all the way to the top, which has been fantastic. A lot tougher assignment today than what he met last time. He had inside barrier, beautiful run in transit and put him away, but a little bit more difficult from the middle of the field, and a lot better quality of race, but he's a young enough horse to take the next step forward, and hopefully overcomes a few little difficulties, but he's going to be strong late, and they need to watch out where he's coming from.
Yeah, that's a fair comment. And, of course, we've all waited to see Astern, and Astern turns up in the Coolmore Stakes today. You're on Star Turn. He looked terrific in winning at Caulfield.
Yeah, I trialled him before that race. I couldn't ride him because he had 53, but, you know, he just jogged around. He didn't do anything special, and then he went to that race. Craig was wide, punching into that breeze, and I thought, oh, he could be a bit vulnerable here. But when he dropped him into overdrive, the way he savaged the line against older horses was a lot better than I thought he could do. And I think he's really climbed the ladder of people's expectations of his ability. And, you know, this is a very high-class race. It's probably the race of the day as far as quality. And, you know, I expect him to run really well.
It's a cracking field, isn't it?
Oh, this is a stallion-making race, and anything that comes out of this race and gets beaten is, you know, don't lose respect for them, because the quality of the field is just above what we've probably seen in the years gone by.
Over the last 4 or 5 weeks, we've seen some amazing days with conditions. Turnbull Stakes Day with a howling gale headwind. We saw it at Caulfield. It was imperative to get cover in those races, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's why the form, it'll be really hard for the form analysts to get their head around the fact that we've had those really big wins and where horses were and running and how much it took out of them and how much to bonus and how much to take away from them. So we had the same at Moonee Valley. That track didn't play right. Sort of, you had to be out wider on certain times and back to the inside. So we haven't had the normal lead-in form that we've seen in the past, so I think some of these races could be won by something a bit bigger odds by the fact of someone's missed something that they've done.
Yeah, that's a fair call. And I've got to ask you about Winx. You've probably seen the backside of Winx a few times. Where do you rate her?
Oh, she's very, very good. I can't see anything competing with her in the next 12 months. Anyway, what's around, she's so dominant. She can sit up on speed, she can come off the back. But when they paired out early by the school there, I thought, oh, this will be a real test. But she just, yeah, it was game over. We might as well just packed up our tools and went home at the 600. But, you know, so dominant. It's always hard to know how much is taking out of those mares. It's like Pete Sampras when he used to play tennis. He looked like he was in second gear, but I'm sure they're revving highly inside. So I'm sure Chris Waller's kept that in the back of his mind. And, you know, he's trying to, her longevity, trying to get as long as they can. So, but she's a superstar, and we probably won't appreciate her for another few years yet when we sit back and really take in what she did. It was just so awesome.
You look at those mares that have come our way in the last 16, 17 years, starting at Sunline, Maccabi Diva, Black Caviar, and along comes Winx. It's extraordinary.
Yeah, we just seem to have someone else step up to the plate. When one takes a step aside, another one steps up. So, yeah, it's great for racing, and, you know, we need a few more kingpin horses like that to bring people back to the race.
Dwayne, great to spend some time with you today on this important day. Safe ride, that's the most important thing, and I hope you can bring home winners today and right through the Cup week and beyond.
Thanks, Brian. It's been a pleasure.